Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
I'm Austin Powers. I like
Gas Mojo.
They're very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby, yeah!
What a gas, baby, yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net engine booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
And we are live tonight. We've got Mark the Badger Borchening, and we've got the Aussie Survivor Man, Dave White. Welcome to the show, everybody. I just had a nap, and I got a pint of hot coffee here, and I am wired. How is everybody tonight? A little different from the usual. I'm not high. I just had a nap, and I heated up reheated some coffee, and looking forward to chatting with a good friend of Red Elk, and Dave and I have corresponded for quite some time, and you know, like all Americans, we've got a fascination and a love for our brothers down under, and we think of them all of them as being fair dinkum, and enjoy talking to them and watching movies about them, and I don't know what it is about Aussies and Americans. I think we love each other at a distance better than... I've heard stories about what our Navy guys get together in port and everything, but I think it's a pretty good match. I think I think pretty much Americans love Aussies. And anyway, welcome to the show. And Mark's with us. Mark's going to he'll help you figure out why it is that you do what you do. And so go ahead and tell everybody about yourself, Dave, and about your path. And unless we could start right out by having Mark do your Mayan birthday sign and what makes you tick. You want to do that?
Yeah, do that.
What's your full birthday?
13th of October, 1955.
I have to translate. That's 13 October 1955, Mark.
I got it.
I love the way Aussie says that. 13. They say 13.
October 13th, 1955. So.
Yep.
What's that?
I think it was just after Einstein left, they brought me in.
Okay, well, you were born on in the traditional Mayan day count, you were born on a day called Six Chuan or Six Bats, composed of two parts, the six and the Chuan. The six is something that kind of goes, a number that relates to things about test and many things to learn and grow and evolve into. A kind of a flow of things as well, and negotiations, you know, moving through things, negotiating through things, and a lot of things about energy of action. So probably, you know, I like to do things, get things done, probably good at talking with other people and developing things, and almost just about every aspect of life almost. So now the accompanying thing, the glyph, Chuan or bats, also called, that one is about things having, you know, time and destiny, and also it's also they tend to say it's like weaving in the history and threads of humanity. So. Probably, you know, combine the two together is testing and learning about how weaving things together and negotiating things with humanity. In a kind of in a nutshell.
Well, from what I saw of his from what I saw,
It reminded me of the cartoon I saw of the Mayan calendar, which was on a big round stone wheel, and the guy coming to the chief. And he says, we got up to 2012, we couldn't fit any more on. And the chief goes, oh, that's going to freak a lot of people out in the future.
Yep, I've seen that one.
You've seen that one?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
thanks very much.
So what, another... Another reading due on you. So that one's kind of just a regular traditional day count. I can look at it another way too, and this part of the reading is going to look at your birth more from the perspective of the next coming world cycle, and it's going to include three parts. The first part will be a forward flow of time, so it's kind of like moving from our world cycle into the next world cycle. And then the second thing is the reverse, the backward flow of time coming from the next world cycle back into our world cycle. And then the third component is where those two things come together in a zero point. Or kind of it's where how you, the thing that speaks about how you move through from one world cycle to the next. So we'll do the first one, the forward flow. And on that one, it's talking for you a lot about things about completion, balancing things. Balance would be a very important thing. It's correct actions, you know, doing things the right way. Truth comes up as a big thing with that. Will, purpose, and discipline. So a lot of things about doing things the right way, truthful, completion, balancing things, and discipline, and, you know, structured things to accomplish those types of goals are coming up. And it's a green energy glyph, which would tie into the center of the mind medicine wheel and also the heart chakra. So that tends to indicate that all this stuff is pretty deeply rooted there and kind of a fundamental driving force, you know, straight from your heart. The backward flow going the other way is talking about change, balancing again, but this time things and bringing in synchronicity into it. So these are this type of stuff that I'm talking about now is probably things that's been showing up in your life recently and getting stronger, you know, anywhere from as far back as 1998 till now. And so these things you might have might notice that it might have been getting stronger. It has a lot of things about movement and thought, consciousness, equality, and then flowing with things, some things, prophecy. This one's going to have a little bit of a connection into the Aztec Sunstone. It also seems to be relating to the kind of an end of a Vulcan cycle and the end of several larger, bigger cycles. So things like that may have been showing up too. Things with water, especially a universality of water. So all kinds of different facets and usage, even water on a spiritual level is coming up. That would tie in with the Hopi, speaking of the purification day. It's going to connect into that. Now, where these two come together, these two things come together, two fine flows, the zero point or the middle point where you walk through it, you have a, that's kind of the gateway of the bridge you're walking across. And this is talking for you about relationships, binding things into the moment, harmony, service, working with others, and more, a little bit more about the same thing we talked about on your first one about will and purpose and discipline and all that stuff. It's also bringing in something here about ancestors and ancestral path. I'm suspecting that is having something to do with the ancestors and stuff in Australia. So maybe there's more to this than meets the eye in terms of your past, maybe long time ago, a real long time ago. Could have been the last world cycle change. So those are some of the things I'm seeing here on this particular reading.
Well, you're seeing things that I don't know anything about, brother. thanks very much for that. I think a lot of what you said probably applies to all of us, though, you know. We all really need to work on those things. I'm a survivor. There's a miracle that I'm still here. I'm very grateful that I'm still here. And I'm very honored to be on Blue Otter's show tonight, too, because, you know, there could be at least two Native American people listening out there. And it's a great honor to be on. I've got no claim to fame at all. I'm basically just a helper. I see myself as a helper. And Creator's given me a lot of skill in that regard. But unfortunately, you can't help people if they don't want to be helped. So you've got to sort of learn that too. And okay. Back to someone else there.
Oh, that's really the truth. But yeah, you're an inspiration for me. And I'm sending out some emails. Maybe we can entice Red up to call. Who knows? But then we'll let that.
he's going to try and listen in.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, I'm just letting everybody know that might be out there looking for something to do that that we're live and that they call in. But yeah, go ahead. Feel free to ramble. You know, this is your time.
Thank you, Will. I'm just looking at the 5 years of Northern Territory Australia intervention, what they call intervention, of the Aboriginal people. And the statistics are incredible. 70% increase in children getting taken into home care away from families that are mostly from neglect, which is attributed to extreme poverty. So they're still having their children taken off them. Today, 2012, they're still losing their kids.
Wow.
Attempted suicide increases by 500% increase. 500% increase in suicide. School attendance is down 60%. Incarceration up 40%, unemployment increasing, housing not good, and so basically it hasn't worked, and the current government has just increased it by another 10 years.
Oh.
And the Aboriginal people are just, they call it the day of shame. You know, they're saying, you know, look, it's caused, we're really suffering because of this intervention. And they control their welfare payments, so they lose control of their money. And I don't know whether they give them food vouchers or how they do it, but this has implications for North America, because you probably know more about this than me, but I believe there's a move towards getting control of welfare money. Is that right?
Yeah, on like the Pine Ridge and some reservations that just aren't playing ball. It's that way, but it's particularly bad in the Dakotas. But it sounds like Australia is kind of like where the United States was, you know, about 40 years ago.
In relation to Indigenous people.
Yeah, it sounds like that's about where things lie. Have there been any revolts or anything going on?
Amazingly, no, Will. There's been a couple of major riots in Redfern, an inner suburb of Sydney in New South Wales, which is sort of like, it's like the eastern part of Australia, the hub of Aboriginality. It's a sort of an Aboriginal ghetto in Sydney. But the real heart of the Aboriginal people is in the Kimberleys, just the northwest corner of Western Australia. And they're having major battles at the moment with this gas plant development up there, which I sent you the story about that. It's going to stuff up their song lines. Now, I don't really understand what the song lines is all about, but it's very important to them, and apparently it interconnects the whole country. And, you know, half the land council, it was a split decision, and basically the multinationals bought them out to the tune of $1 billion over 30 years. But, you know, They're against it. There's burial grounds. There's dinosaur footprints. A third of the humpback whale population has their major nursery right where all this is going to happen. So there's going to be a big sort of fight over this. Bob Brown, one of the leading environmentalists, is on the Sea Shepherd, the ship that goes around, the anti-whaling ship.
Yeah.
He's, because they've got the captain in jail in Germany or somewhere for stopping illegal whaling somewhere else, Bob Brown's going to take over And he was very successful down in Tasmania protecting the Franklin River and a lot of those magnificent old-growth forests with 200, 300-foot tall hardwood eucalypt trees. They're unique on the planet. There's nothing else like it. And there's a big... He lives down there. So he's been very successful. He was in politics. He's just got out of politics. He's a homosexual guy and a very beautiful man. And he's probably the only politician that I've ever respected. And now that he's out of it, I respect him even more. A true fella. You know, he speaks from the heart and he speaks true. And unlike most of the bloody politicians today, it's just you couldn't believe a word they got his head, you know?
Yeah.
But so there's a big battle coming up in the northwest Kimberleys in northwest Australia, so keep an eye on that. It's the largest sort of gas development in the world at the moment. And it'll be interesting to see whether they move their pipeline further south away from this sensitive area. And away from the whales too, of course. And the young girl Miranda Gibson, 200 foot up on a platform in an old growth eucalypt in Tasmania, been there 7 months. Real sweetie, just had a birthday, and says she's not coming down until those forests are protected. They're being wood chipped and sold off to a Malaysian company called Tan An, who are selling it as eco-friendly, which is absolute crap. You know, they're not eco-friendly at all. They're really precious old-growth forests, and they're just the whole industry itself is all subsidised by the Australian taxpayer. It's not even viable, you know. So they're just being destructive. And you know, there's endangered species, the Tassie devil, and other species down there that haven't got voices, and Miranda's a voice for them, and the standing people down there.
Wow. Well, it used to be, a few years ago, we used to hear quite a bit about what was going on. Maybe I'm just not in the loop that I used to be. You just don't hear a whole lot in American news about what's going on down under. And it used to be we could hear quite a bit. I don't know why the disconnect.
Yeah, maybe well, the trouble is the bloody media is controlled by a few, as you probably know, and they're only interested in their agendas, you know. And if you control the media, you control the population. And like I said, the American dream, you can only see it if you're asleep, you know. Controlling the welfare money, the payment, I believe that it was not just Native Americans. I thought it was for the whole of the USA. Where they get control of your money, you can't, if you've got any money, you can't access it.
Well, see, up here, if you're, I think if you're a full blood or a half blood, you've got to have somebody, you know, to help you control your money. And that's still true, Mark. I think that's the way it is. It's was that way for a long time. Do you know anything about? Have you heard anything about that, Mark?
About what?
About you know, if you're a full blood and live on a reservation, you are a federal person. I think a half blood too, and I don't think they've got full control of their money. I know it was like that, you know, for a long time, and I'm pretty sure It's still that way, for at least for reservation Indians. And not a lot of reservation Indians in the country, but there's, you know, maybe a half million little reservations here and there.
Well, yeah. It does remind me of what was saying, though, of one of the things that the Hopi elders talked about, and they said the, you know, the government would be like this mother hen and kind of bring you under her wing and sort of like pretend to take care of you and stuff.
Yeah.
And they said, one day they're going to kick you away.
Yeah.
And I think we're starting to see that. And I think what the latest statistics are is that about 1 out of 6 Americans are on food stamps right now, government assistant programs.
I think it's like 1 out of 4.
Yeah, maybe so. That is a lot. So, yeah, they definitely want to get everybody, you know, dependent upon them so they can, you know, control the purse strings.
Yeah. And not to change the subject, but sometime tonight I'd like to ask you what you hear about the observatories and rumors about Planet X and stuff like that whenever you're ready, Dave, if you are following that kind of thing.
No, I was many years ago. I was sort of looking at that.
Just curious what you heard.
I'm more working with humans now in the environmental, trying to protect the destruction that's going on to our life support system at the moment. You know, someone described that it's like driving down a road really fast through all these intersections without stopping, and sooner or later there's going to be collision, you know. And there's that many bloody rocks and shit rolling around out in space, but that's always been on the cards, you know. And there's not a lot you can do about it, so you've got to get on with your life in the meantime. And what was the other thing?
Did
you go, Will?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I'm also letting everybody over at the Aboriginal Tennis Embassy know that you're on the air, invite them to call, and they've got like 5,500 people that like that. And
whoa!
Yeah, we'll see. We'll fish around a bit. We'll see if we can get somebody... if we can reel somebody in and see if we can get somebody to call in tonight, I'll check and see how many. A lot of times on these shows, won't have a lot of live listeners, but we'll have. We've been averaging within 24 hours of the show running about 100 people, which is the show seems to be growing. I guess it's just like anything else. But we've got. Oh my gosh, we've got shows that have had, you know, 900 listeners, and so yeah, we seem to be growing. But
there was just on the 10 Embassy, Will, there was a bit of an altercation there on Australia Day. Australia Day means different things to different people, you know.
Yeah.
And to the Aboriginal people, it was Invasion Day, and
yeah.
So, you know, they mourn what happened. And anyway, at the embassy, somebody came over to the group and told them that the person, the opposition leader, he said that they should take the tent down because it no longer serves any purpose.
Uh-huh.
Is over in this restaurant. It was all glass, like a glass house. So they all went over there and started banging on the windows, and the Prime Minister's in there, and the security are having heart attacks, and overreacting and whisking the Prime Minister away.
I heard about that. That's been, yep.
You hear about that? And, I mean, a credit to the Aboriginal people, they have been incredibly tolerant, you know. I believe the first 100 years or so was full-on war. Conflict, you know, fighting, but now they're fighting probably like the Native Americans in the courts, you know,
yep.
Because they've been educated, they've become lawyers, and so they're not happy about the intervention. That's not working. They want to try something else. The 10 embassy stays because the white fella still hasn't worked out that you got to respect other human beings, doesn't matter what they look like. Unfortunately, there's a lot of symbolic human beings, and they only move from one symbol to another. And, you know, if they've seen one drunken Aborigine in a park one time, then that sort of blurs, in a symbolic way, that's how they see Aborigines, you know. Primitive, ignorant people that bang sticks together. And they need to become fully fledged human beings and drop the symbolism and start seeing reality and start respecting other people, other cultures, as equals. That's the real challenge for human beings, I believe.
Yep. Yeah. Are there any controlled substances, shall we say, that Aboriginal people use to vision quest that are like illegal? And is there any struggle over that, like there is up here in North America?
No, the struggle is over grog, alcohol, beer.
Yeah.
And in the Northern Territory, you can be arrested if you're an Aborigine with a can of beer in your hand. It's a fine. It's you're in trouble. So
I'm just wondering if the Abos use any plant substances to seek visions.
There is one. I think it's called Paturi. Paturi or something like that. Begins with P. P-I-T. And it's a native plant, and that's the only one that I'm aware of, Will.
Has the state made it illegal?
It's not controlled.
Oh, okay. There's been quite the every Sunday night. You know, we've got Prophecy Keepers becomes Oklahoma Native American Church, and there's been some victories here with peyote, that's a done deal, but we're beginning to get victories for cannabis and other substances. And just was wondering. Yeah, it seems like, you know, with them taking the kids away off the reserves, you know, that was going on back in the 60s. It sounds like Australia is 40-50 years behind where we were, and Canada seems. I think they're ahead of both of us. I know the Indians are more affluent in Canada, and I think politically they're more successful than they are here in the U.S. But yeah, it's good to get a different perspective. Yeah, are you aware they've connected Aboriginal DNA in South America with Aboriginal DNA from Australia a few years ago?
Really? South America?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All the continents were joined, weren't they? Well,
mm-hmm.
They're all connected.
Mm-hmm. Gondwanaland, right.
Yeah. So, and, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe the stone carvings of the Toltecs seem to indicate the facial features are more like Aboriginal. But yeah, I think it was these are discoveries that were made. Oh, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, maybe more down around Tierra del Fuego, which would have been at one time directly connected in a Gondwanaland situation. So yeah, we're finding. We really are all related.
Just on marijuana, drug and alcohol use is very popular in Aboriginal communities. like it is, no doubt, in Native American communities. And the Aboriginal word for ganja is gandhi. Gandhi. Just my two bobs worth on this. As you know, I'm an old head from New Guinea. I reached a point where I had a lot of animals, and I loved them to death. And I realized that I couldn't keep getting stoned and keep my animals because, you know, I was in my own little world in my head, you know, and I couldn't pay attention to them. So I had to make a decision, you know, whether I was... And I mean, I've had my father offer to buy me a car to get me off dope, you know? No, Dad, I love dope too much. And, but it was my love for my animals that did it. Fortunately, I could never afford black market stuff. I always grew my own, you know, organic, homegrown. So I got all my dope and I took it and I threw it in the chook yard. Well, the chooks were pretty happy for a couple of days. And probably thousands of dollars worth of, you know, street value dope. And then an amazing thing happened. You know, I thought I couldn't survive this horrible, cruel world unless I had a couple of cones once a week, you know?
Yeah.
But after I started to straighten out, I realized that I didn't have to worry about the cops anymore.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't a criminal anymore. So that was one bit of paranoia out of the way.
Yeah.
And I became happy. I've actually become happier and healthier. And it all started
good.
From the gathering of the elders, you should have seen the teepees, Will. It was in central Victoria Highlands, and there's people come from all over the world, elders, Aboriginal, Native American. And there was a woman there called Grandma Connie. And I've got a feeling they were Lakota because her husband was a big bloke. His name was Bear. And every time Grandma Connie spoke, my eyes just filled up with tears. It was incredible. The healing that went on there was absolutely incredible. It was so powerful. And that healing needs to happen all over, especially with drug abuse. Now, I realize you're talking about sacramental use.
Right.
But I'm in relation to drug abuse. And the problems that causes in Indigenous communities worldwide in general.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
Big difference. A lot of healing needs to happen, you know?
That's right. Well, I don't know. You know, I grew up in the dominant culture, it's a big wake-up call when you start going to visit the elders and I think it was about 1990 when I first started going to see Rolling Thunder. And, you know, a man had a real attitude. But, well, he had some things to say and had a perspective that didn't quit and was quite a teacher. And yeah, you know, they make you cry. You know, they're our collective conscience, it seems like. And, you know, these elders, the elder you were just talking about. I wish everybody could have the experience you and I are having, you know, and I'm hoping, you know, people like you and me are the vanguard, I think the more the world gets in trouble economically, the more they're going to be reaching out for some indigenous wisdom, because they're going to know people that live closer to the earth are going to have some answers for them.
Oh, absolutely. You just reminded me of what Rolling Thunder taught me. He taught me quite a few things from his books, you know, from a distance. But one was called Thunder Tonic, which is a drop of eucalyptus oil, a drop of... peppermint oil in boiling water or hot water, and the fumes that come off that sort of sting your eyes, and you think, God, if I drink this, it's going to kill me. but it doesn't. It's like it's not enough to be toxic. And you drink that, and it's if you you know if you've got the sniffles, if it's midwinter, that is a wonderful.
Oh yeah.
Wonderful medicine. And we're in midwinter here, by the way. Have you got a hot night up there?
Oh, it's been it's 76. I don't know what that is Celsius. It's about 2 degrees over room temperature right now here, and but the days. I mean, we went through a spell of a couple of weeks where we were, you know, between 90 and 100. And of course, we live on a plateau, and over in Knoxville, it was even higher. But we're not getting the brunt of it here like they're getting on the plains. We've had lots of rain. In a 10-day period, I think we had 9 inches. We're getting it, and the rest of the country's drying up. But this is what the prophecy said were going to happen. The wildfires were predicted. They've been going on for the second year now. And, yeah, everything that's happening up here as far as a prophetic picture is just a bullseye. Wouldn't you say, Mark?
Yeah, I think so. And we're seeing a few other patterns that are developing pretty quickly, too. More melting at the poles in the Greenland ice sheet just over 4 days just went wham and wiped out most of it. So we may be seeing some acceleration. That may be tied in with the heat wave that hit the United States, because I think they said they broke something like maybe 5,000 records or so all over the United States.
Well, Jim Phillip, an ex-Special Forces guy over in Republic Broadcasting by the name of Jim Moore, broke news, I think, around the 10th of July, that the first week in July, of course, there's a Special Forces underground in this country, and he broke the news that U.S. Army military dependents that live in coastal areas have been brought into meetings, forced to sign non-disclosure agreements, and are being told that there's going to be problems with coastlines, and they've been given a protocol of to have a go bag ready to go. And been shown a map of what possibly could happen with rising sea levels, and yeah, it's kind of interesting. I sent out a little alert earlier today. I'm not sure if I sent it to you, Mark, but yeah, there's strange stuff going on. There's some strange stuff going on. What's the I know in Australia, you know, most everybody lives within, what, about 50 miles of the ocean on the coastal plains, right, Dave?
Yeah, yeah, the main population is right around the coastal regions, and the
mm-hmm.
whole center is sort of arid, you know, or with
uh-huh.
the desert.
What's your elevation?
Elevation here in feet. I've had plenty of practice converting meters to feet and decimals to metric. Imperial to metric. What is it? It's in feet. I think it's about, I'm a little bit low. I think it's about 700 feet.
Okay. Yeah, that's respectable. How far are you from the coast?
I'm well aware of what could be coming, and in fact, I'm up on a hill, and I look out over the down in the valleys, and I sort of envision them water, you know, seawater.
Good,
and
good.
In fact, they were. Once upon a time, this was an inland sea. So
uh-huh.
everything tends to go in circles.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you're up a little higher than most folks. And yeah, there's some... There's quite a rumor mill about what's going on, but Yeah, the I seem to run into these Green Beret guys all my life, and they've got their own little intelligence system. You know, they're in with the SEALs, and they've got their sources and their ways of passing information. And if listeners want to check it out, they can just go over to Republic Broadcasting and look up James Moore, and his show is called the Liberty Man. But that's good. That's good to hear. I'm glad you're liable to be safe. Spell that.
G-A-O-S-S-R-E-Y. Jeffrey.
Uh-huh.
Gurumu. G-U-R-R-U-M-U-L. Gurumu.
Oh, did you email me? I saw something and didn't have a lot of time. Did you email me? Oh, okay. I'll insert that into the show after we're done, and so people can hear it with a better quality.
Hey, good man. Good man. So I'm flying off. Yeah, I'm doing it rough here. I'm just... When I had the radio show, you know.
Sounds like he's got a beautiful voice and the instrumentation.
Oh, absolutely beautiful. He brought tears to my eyes then. I heard it a bit better than you.
Yeah, I'll make arrangements so people can hear that.
Blue Otter.
Yeah.
That John Moore.
Yeah.
If people go to YouTube and they put in a search for John Moore Show 7-21-2012, they'll see a show where he's talking about some stuff.
Yeah,
I think there's
I'll,
two parts to it. I think there's a couple parts to that.
Yeah, I'll send you. I spoke with him this morning too. His show's at about 7 o'clock Central Time. But he's got a couple people that put his stuff up on YouTube, and he says that they're not going to be doing that from now on. But I suggest people follow. Follow his show. It's gonna be, the other group, a good one to follow if you're interested in stuff about Planet X is the 2012. This is a Facebook book group. 2013 Brown Dwarf Star Planet X Nibiru Flyby, and it's hosted by the famous Doctor or just Alfred Lambermont. Ray the Third, quite a distinguished author. He was back in the 70s. He was involved in government planning. Should something come in from outer space, you know how are you going to handle it? So, really, really good sources. But yeah, Dave, I'll be sure and download that and put that in that place so people can. Enjoy it in a really good quality, but I see him, Geoffrey Gurumel, Yunupingu, born 1970, he's an Australian indigenous musician. He sings in the Yolngu language, and he was born on Elko Island. And I'm particularly interested in hearing the instrumentation. Better. It sounds like it's really beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. I'm looking at Nibiru's August, coming in August 2012. There goes my bloody holiday.
Well, where Bray has it coming in next July, August. It's like Marshall Masters is in February and there's some interesting things up on you. You know, I really didn't follow this thing. I'm the kind of person, I kind of let things come to me, and but I've gotten a little bit more serious about paying a little bit more attention, particularly in light of what the Hope Elders said. They can do a Google search for bluestar.html, .htm, bluestar.htm, and you'll come up with a page on Robert Goswell's website, and you can read about what they said. And, it seems to fit pretty much hand in glove with the reality on the ground nowadays, as opposed to what they've been saying for quite a long time.
Are you up high, Will? You're up in the mountains, are you? And with lots of trees?
2,000 feet elevation. We're on the Cumberland Plateau. It's the largest wooded plateau, either the largest or second largest wooded plateau in the world. It stretches from
I think almost up to West Virginia, down into northeastern Alabama. And it's this is the ancient homeland of the Uniuntikwalaski, the military protectors. This is the high ground for the Cherokee Nation. And very, very sacred place. And very nice place to live. Growing, it has a good growing season here. They get 15 inches of rain a year. Lots of wood. And nice place to live. Joel Skousen, the guy that wrote the book about survival homes, called it the American Redoubt of the East. He feels that this will be the safest place east of the Mississippi in case of major disasters. And I was just led here. You know, my parents moved here in the 80s. I didn't grow up here. I grew up out in California and basically and bounced around some different places, New York and Florida. But my parents settled here after I left the house. And I wanted to settle here, but it wasn't until after they passed away. I was told in Vision Quest and on my Mayan birth date in August of 2008 that I had no choice but to go east, and this is where I ended up. It's just the way it worked out, and I'm glad I'm here. It's a good place, and lots of good people here.
Oh, it sounds great. You just reminded me of one of the elders saying that the safest place is in your heart.
That's right.
that's the real safe place. And you also reminded me about the, you said it the other week, pushing off on the shore and not being afraid and going with the flow. And it could be a good time. I think it will be a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be both, you know. It'll be terrible, but it'll be great too, because the way the world is now is not good. We've got the Arab Spring going down in Syria as we speak. And I'm wondering, yeah, right, well, when's the West Spring happening? And then you put things like bloody comets coming through. That, you know, if we don't gauge each other, in the meantime, there'll be the Earth suffering. She's in pain. She's going through major sufferings. You know, she's a living being, and she feels, and she breathes, and she's alive. And symbolic people don't realize that, and they're bloody hell-bent on destroying her. And it's our responsibility to look after her, because we actually are her, David Suzuki. We are her. We are the Earth, you know. Everything that makes up our bodies is the Earth. The water, the air, everything. We should all share it. And these people, the destroyer, what I call the destroyers, the human destroyers, they need to be checked. They need to be resisted, because they're a danger to everyone. Comets, not too much you can do about a comet, you know. But the real, like you said, when the shit hits the fan, the old ways, Red Elk's always telling people, learn the old ways, you know, because They're the things that are going to sustain you in the future, you know.
That's right.
As the truck stop, as soon as the prime movers stop rolling, you know, that's it. People will start to starve. There'll be no food in the supermarkets. You know, that could happen real quick. The earthquakes are increasing down here. We've had the huge fires like we're seeing in North America now. We've had them over the last, in that 10 years of drought we just went through. At the moment, we're having a beautiful green, wet winter, and we're truly blessed, you know, at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very, very thankful.
Well, yeah, you know, the prophecies talk about, you know, millions of people dying. You know, you look at the Bible, or and I discovered that that the Hopi basically saying the same thing that the Catholic Church kind of snuck out the the fulfillment of the third Fatima prophecy. They kind of snuck it out in the 80s, and Pope John Paul was buttonholed by some real pious believers in Germany in the mid 80s, and they said, hey, you know, why hasn't the Vatican revealed this? And he says, well, he said, if I were to tell you that giant sheep ice the size of continents and oceans would, you know, sweep over entire continents and millions of people would die in an instant, that wouldn't be something so much to be desired, you know. You know, by some accounts, it could be real interesting. But you know, if our population was cut back naturally to 0.1%, you know, we're talking about less than 1 million people left on the planet. And yeah, I think we could probably have 1,000 years of peace.
Yeah.
Just like Albert Einstein said, you know, he says, after World War II, he says, I don't know how the next war is going to be fought. He says, but for sure the one after that is going to be fought with sticks and stones. And, you know, I used to really resent.
Are you there? Hello?
Hello, are you there?
Yeah,
I can hear you, Dave. I used to kind of, you know, resent the implications that some Native people were saying, you know, that all this was going to happen, and you know, I thought it was absolutely terrible. But it's like James Moore was saying on the show, you know, it's about belief systems, and you know, most people just do not want to hear this. And my mother was one of those people. You know, she lived right in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and what I talked with her about, and sometimes she'd say, hey, you know, I hope when the bomb comes, it falls right in my lap. And I told her, I said, well, you know, statistically, Mom, you know, most people are going to survive a nuclear war. Then you got to worry about, well, what are you going to do afterwards? So,
my mom says the same thing. She wants it to drop right on her.
Uh-huh, yeah, well, there you go. Well, what, if you want, I want you to tell some folks about your some of your preparations that you're doing down there. I know you've got quite a little going concern down there.
This has been ongoing for several years now, Will. And you know, it sort of waxes and wanes, and 2012 was always the year that I thought something major was going to go down, and we're in it. We're right in the guts of it now, so I wouldn't be surprised if whatever happens, and people can... And times is the thing. You can never give times with prophecies.
Yeah.
So no one really knows the time. Only the Creator knows the time, and that's probably a good thing. But... As far as prep goes, just recently I've been making these really cool little survival necklaces by doing cobra weave paracord stitching, which are really pretty. It's dead simple to do, but it looks pretty. And sort of just playing around with different fire lighting rigs, and Sparky's a good one from survival.com, survival... something, Sparky. Just type in Sparky.
Uh-huh.
That's the beauty. It's the size of a matchbox, and feather lightweight, and you can just hang around your neck with a little canister of cotton wool, or you know, dry traditional rotten wood or I think there's a fungus is really good too, and of course cattails. But cotton wool's fantastic, and if you put Vicks with it in winter, you undo your little thing and it becomes a snuff box. You know, you have a hit of Vicks at the same time. One spark on Vicks and whoosh, it's highly inflammable. So they're making them. And but before that, I just thought, time to stock up on food. And the cheapest way to get food down here, there's probably no stores in Northern America. They're called Aldi stores. They're, I think it's German. It's European stores.
How do you spell that?
Extremely cheap. Aldi's, A-L-D-I.
Yeah, we got them.
Aldi.
We
you
got
them?
Yep. Yeah, we
the U.S.
They, they've been here. We don't have one. There's one about 30 miles from here, but every chance I get, they're all over the West. And every chance I get, I'll shop at one before I go to Walmart. Oh, by the way, Sparky, it's Ultimate Survival Technologies. It's on YouTube.
Yep.
S-P-A-R-K-Y.
It's superior to the Blast Match, its big brother, in the sense that it's easier to use, and it's lighter, and it's better to carry. The Blast Match is a big, heavy, bulky thing, but if you're a big bloke and you got big hands, you probably prefer the Blast Match. But the Sparky is much easier to use, and the intensity of the sparks is unbelievable. It's a special rod, magnesium rod. Anyway, back to food, if you see like tins of baked beans or tin fish or bully beef or whatever on special, then you hit them, you know, if they're a dollar each or something, and you just buy cartons of them when they're on special and stock up with them.
Yeah, I bought six of the magnesium ones off of HarborFreight.com. They're only like $3 a piece.
Yeah, 3/8 thick is about 8 mil. 3/8.
Uh-huh.
Nice thick rod. And you're probably better off that. For $3, the spark is about $10, I think, up there. But for $3, you could get 3 magnesium flint and steel rods. They sell them on eBay, delivered from Hong Kong for $3. I don't know how the hell.
That's what I've got. These are 3 1/8 inch long, about 1.5 inches wide, and 3/8 inch thick. And they come with a blade and a striker. And they're like $3 at HarborFreight.com. I bought 6 of them.
Just hand them out to your family and friends. But eventually, we're going to have to go back to, you know, carrying the tinder in the live tin. Coal, a lot of coal around in the marsh, you know. We're going to have to go back to that. But these modern tech things might be a good sort of gap bridges, you know, until we learn to live in harmony with the earth again.
Well, the bow and drill, the only way you can learn that is, now the Boy Scouts of America sells the bow and drill kits. It's not hard to learn, but the base plate is made of cedar, and the drill is made of a softwood, but there's a few tricks to it. You have to use the grease from the sides of your nose to lubricate it. But it's very easy to start a fire with bow and drill once you learn how and identify what kind of wood you need to use. But you can buy the kits from Boy Scouts of America. You can probably find one on eBay. But as far as I know, they are the only people that that sell these kits and teach how to do this. And I also recommend everybody get a Boy Scout field book from the 60s or 70s. The ones from the 90s are a little too modern. But a Boy Scout field book, I picked up a hard library copy for, $10, $15.
from the late 60s, you know, from the era when I was a scout. And there's a lot of people, even military people, will tell you, you know, if you got one of those, you know, you can survive. If you got a knife and a way to start a fire, and some cord, but you'll learn how to make cord, make fire, lashings, you name it. It's all in a field book, not a handbook, but it's got to be a Boy Scout field book.
I actually experienced that in New Guinea, Will. They still have their traditional gardens and their and they make baskets, and I used to watch the girls rolling the bush fiber on their thigh, you know, to make the string for the they call them billum bags.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful, really beautiful. And I don't know what plant they got it from. Unfortunately, I was a bit ignorant back then, but I'd love to know what plant they got it from. Hemp is excellent. Fiber, probably the best.
Oh, yeah.
Stinging nettles. And like anything, once you learn it, it's dead easy. You can do it with your eyes closed, you know?
Yep.
Cordage is really important in survival situations. The Aborigines used to make huge nets to go across creeks, bloody yards long, you know, and frighten the ducks into them. You know, the ducks would fly low on the water and run into these nets. And they'll run out and grab a duck edge, you know, a couple of duck eggs.
Sure.
But the time that must have gone into making these nets, they had plenty of time.
Yeah, you know, it's not that hard. It's not that hard. I went through a youth leadership program at Brigham Young, and we made rope. You can make rope out of twine very easily, and you know, and with a lot more effort, you can make twine out of bark and different things. But it can be done. There's lots of things. There's lots of things that can be done. If you just know a little bit. The one other thing I recommend everybody get, and they need to get it soon, you can only get it from the Boy Scout. Well, let's see. I picked up one from Emergency Essentials in Utah. It's a signal mirror. They're also known as heliographs, and these were used for signaling Morse code from mountaintop to mountaintop. This is the method that the U.S. Army used to defeat the Apaches during the Apache War. They get up on top of the mountains, and they're just a pocket-sized mirror the size of a credit card, but they've got a hole in the middle. And you look through the hole, and you just bounce sunlight over to, and you can see exactly where you're bouncing it to. Absolutely quiet. They can't be listened into. But I recommend everybody get one of the, I think it's like $6 from Emergency Essentials, and a little card with some Morse code. But you can signal that way from miles and miles, 50 miles, easy. You know, clear day in a desert area, no problem. Better than a bull roarer.
I don't know what they use.
Tell people about, you know, I'm talking about the bull roarers, the Aboriginal use. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know why they use them. I don't know what the traditional use is for, to call the spirits in. I don't know, to frighten the way back.
They can be heard for miles.
For communication.
Yeah, they can be heard for miles. You get up high and... Crocodile Dundee, I think, in the second movie, demonstrated this. But, yeah, they can be heard a long way away because of the frequency, okay. I guess.
Yes.
A lot of things to think about.
Out of the desert, they use fire, that's smoke signals, like the Native Americans, and just make a fire, and you can see it for miles, and, you know, somebody did. They didn't have mobile phones. They didn't have mirrors, and probably out in the desert, the blue water probably wouldn't work because of the salt and whatever. But smoke, in the future, you might know, I was telling Rio the other day, in the future, you know, survival whistles and stuff like that. Blowing a whistle is probably the last thing you'd be thinking about doing.
Oh, yeah.
You want to keep quiet.
Absolutely. Yeah, everybody has a whistle. Cheap, cost you a buck, and they're lightweight. Everybody needs it. And the other thing is a real, honest-to-goodness glass, magnifying glass. Now, you can get these, you know, for a buck or so, but you want something that's glass, and you can actually take them out of their loop, you know, wrap them up in a bit of cloth, but you can keep them right in your wallet. And, you know, that's an instant fire starter on a sunny day. And, you know, most days are sunny. And, yeah, that's no problem. Did you ever, when you were a kid, did you ever burn up ants with one?
No. I used to write in wood with them.
There you go.
But I've been buying a few of them lately, actually, at the supermarket. And they're in these cool little vinyl sheets, and they sort of swivel out and swivel back in to the sandwich, you know? And then they're only for the bus.
Are they glass or plastic?
No, I think they're plastic.
Well, if you take real good care of the plastic ones, they're credit card shaped in size, but you got to take real good care of them. And the glass ones are a little bit thicker, but they'll last a lot longer. But if you, you know how plastic is, you get any kind of Mars on it, and they wouldn't last as long, and it wouldn't be able to need those good optics. You know, they're a buck at a dollar store, $2, something like that. But and these are just little bitty things that you can get now that'll make life a lot easier in a bad situation.
Fire from ice, Will.
Say again?
How do you make fire from ice? How do you make fire from ice?
From ice.
From ice.
Well, I saw a video today about how to use ice to peel potatoes in about 15 seconds. yeah, the gal that used to be on Gilligan's Island showed how to do it. You just take your potatoes and you cut a circle around them, just score the potato around the center, and boil them in water for about 5 minutes. And then you take them out, put them in ice water for about 10 seconds, and then you they just slide right off. You know, you just take your hand and pull, it just degloves it. And if ice is available. But how do you make fire from ice?
You make a lens out of the ice, like a magnifying lens.
Oh, yeah.
Quite simple. Quite simple.
Yeah.
Use water to shape it, polish it up, and you create a magnifying glass.
Coke bottles. Yeah, there's a lot of fires. Yeah, a lot of fires used to be started by people that threw glass bottles out. And the conditions got right, and sun got in the right position, and bottom of a Coke bottle, has started a lot of fires, you know, in the old days. Most have been picked up now, but there's all kinds of, you know, eyeglasses. There's a lot of things that can be pressed into service, but there's nothing like a small, you know, 3-inch magnifying glass but it's like General Patton used to say, he says, it doesn't take any brains to be uncomfortable.
There's a YouTube video of a plastic drink bottle with some water in it, in the bottom, the round bottom part of it, and the sunlight going through that starting a fire.
Uh-huh. Well, putting for purifying water. They're saying the simplest, easiest way to do it, put it in a 1-liter bottle, let it stop sun. There's YouTube videos about that. That would be a major issue, cataclysm situations, is water purification. And I had a friend, let me tell you about an interesting vision a friend of mine had.
this guy was a Green Beret during the Vietnam years. And when he came home in the mid-70s, he was a like a sheriff. They call them constables down in Texas. But he was investigating a traffic accident, got hit by a drunk driver. And when I met him, he had had like 13 back surgeries. I knew him for a couple of years, and 3, 4, 5 years. And of course, I told him about some of the spiritual experiences I had. And he called me up one day. He says, "I have to apologize to you." And I said, "What for?" He says, "You know all that stuff you were telling me?" He says, "I thought it was BS." He says, "Not anymore." I said, "Well, Bobby, what happened?" He said, "Well, you know, I had a surgery here not long ago." And he says, I kind of woke up out of the anesthesia too early. And he said, "I just remember everything was groggy, and I looked up and was making some noise." And he said, "I just remember a nurse saying, 'Hit him with the needle.'" And he said, "The next thing I knew, I was sitting on an Army cot in a GP medium tent." And he says, "And all my special forces team that either died in Vietnam or since we got back were all seated around me in a semicircle." And I looked up and I said to them, I said, "Oh, geez, guys, am I dead?" And they said, no, Doc, not dead. And I said, "Well, where am I?" Well, he said, "This is not heaven. This is not earth. It's in between." And he says, "At that point, the most boisterous member of the team spoke up and said, 'Doc, we're here to tell you that there is a shitstorm coming down in this country like this country has never seen, and you're not ready.'" Now, Doc had about 20 guns in his, including fully automatic ones, all legal, and he had a 500,000 rounds, .223 in his basement. And he says, "Oh, I'm ready." And they said, "No, you're not ready." And he says, "Well, what am I not doing?" And they said, "Two things, water purification and food preservation, you're not ready for." And he said that the next day his wife came to visit him, and she related to him that she had a dream that same night, you know, when he was in post-op. And in that dream, a Vietnamese girl with a turban, like the people in the mountains used to wear, walked up to her with a Green Beret that had a little chocolate-colored bar on. Anybody who was familiar with all special forces knew that chocolate bar was that they were a provisional. They hadn't earned their full beret yet. And he said, "Honey," he said, "I never told you." He says, "But..." He says, "During the war, I married a Montagnard woman, and she was killed by the VC, and I buried her with my presentation beret." And so he called me up and apologized. But yeah, he told me that about 1996 or seven, something like that. And and I'll bet he can get ready. Knowing Bobby, yeah, he's been getting ready. And since then, he's had a couple of small young girls, and they're probably in their teens by now. But yeah, it's like I don't know what it is. You know, some people are being told to get ready, and I know this has been going on with me since '82, and I've been telling everybody I know.
Well, there's some great water.
I was going to say,
great water filters out there.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've got the Katadyn is the one I've got. It's a NATO issue. What do you got?
I've got at the moment I'm drinking out of a Brita. Do you have Brita water purification bottles and stuff up there?
Yeah, you can buy them.
It's like a sports bottle, and it's got a cartridge in it.
Uh-huh.
They're okay for clean water, but I've got a better quality one for you can drink like muddy water and it just tastes like rainwater.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've got. I've got a Katadyn Combi, which is like NATO issue, and it's good for like 13,000 gallons.
Yep, very good. Yeah, no, I can't afford the one I want. Too expensive. I can't afford it. So I've just got cheaper versions. And
you can make your own.
I've been filtering my rainwater for over 20 years, and
mm-hmm.
like this ceramic candles, and it's a Brazilian clay double clay pot thing, you know, and I just put the rainwater into it, and it takes that sort of rainwater tank taste out, and they last a very long time because it's not dirty water, you know, it's clean water.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Berkey water filter up here is a big deal. A lot of people are buying these Berkey. They're just a gravity-fed situation, but they're big and bulky. There would be, if you were sedentary, you'd want a Berkey. But
yeah, if you're on the you can get a you can get those Berkey-type ceramic candles, and then you can get a plastic hose and put it in there, and you can make a siphon type water filter, so you can just get a couple of buckets or something with that candle, and you can get one of those for like, you know, $40-$50.
The candle's just the part that's the filter itself.
Yeah.
Sell
for about $20 down here.
Yeah, make them out of a bucket. I've seen just out of a 5-gallon bucket, there's a lot that can be done, and just make them yourself. But the ceramic,
Sorry, Will, there's a little straw. I think it's called survival straw.
Mm-hmm.
And I tested one of those, and I was amazed how clean the water from a sort of a horrible brown, murky Murray River water. The water, it filtered it like beautiful, clean rainwater with not even the hint that it came out of muddy water. Campingsurvival.com, they sell them really cheap, and it's something you could carry in your top pocket, you know? Just little straws, and they got carbon in them.
Yeah, they're only good for about 50 or 100 gallons. Bang for your buck. The Katadyn, you know, they're about $130. And if you stake out eBay, a lot of times you can find them that are used or they've been sitting around a long time. But the Katadyn, the Katadyn Combi, as far as the bang for the buck, I mean, they're microfilters impregnated with silver, and you can also get a little extra boost, you know, from charcoal, but they'll filter out anything that's animal or they'll filter it out, and they only weigh, I don't know, pound and a half, something like that, and the other ones are nice to have. You're going to go on, you know, day trips or something like that, but yeah, there's a lot of things out there. There's a problem is the expense. That is a problem. But you said, you build your own filter of it, you know, a barrel and just different kinds of media. You know, sand and rocks, and you gradually. How do you do your filtering? You using rocks and sand and everything?
No, I use a ceramic silver impregnated candle.
Gotcha.
Like they're about $20, and they last years. But the one I want is the Katadyn pocket microfilter.
Uh-huh.
And they're $263 US on eBay, which is it's a lot of money for me. But I've been after one of those for years and years, so. You may have inspired me today, Will, to actually finally get one.
Yeah, I'm showing that they can be had for, you know, about $200. I don't know what the exchange rate is, but they're a little bit smaller than the Combi. I see the some people are selling them for as much as $370, but I see that they can be had for around $200.
We've got another $50 postage on top of that. Remember,
Use Google for your search, and I think you can come up with something a little bit cheaper.
I'm looking at about between $200 and $300 for one of those microfilters. It's pocket microfilters, 13,000 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
And the 0.2, that's really important, 0.2 ceramic filter.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Czech blocks don't go down that small.
Yeah, it's a microfilter.
So 0.2 is the magic thing you want to be going for if you're going to get one. Swiss made, so you know, it's going to be quality product.
That's right. Yeah, these are issued to Swiss troops and a lot of NATO. I understand NATO, European troops, they all get Katadyn filters of one ilk or another.
You can collect water off leaves, off wet grass, and dew in the morning. You can use a sock and on wet grass in the early morning, and then wring it out and drink that. There's lots of ways to collect water, but water's the three threes: 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. So water's right up there. You've got weeks to find your food, but you've got to have your water.
That's right. Now, that Katadyn Combi is a 0.2 micron ceramic and good for 13,000 gallons. It got a 1 liter per minute output, and it's a little bit bigger than the micro or the one you were talking about, but you know it's less than I'm looking at $180 on Amazon, and I've found these. Sometimes you'll find them been sitting around stores, you know, $130 or used. People they lay around for years and people don't use them, but the Katadyn Combi C-O-M-B-I. Is a good buy. You might want to take a look at that one too, rather than the.
I'm having a look at that now. $191, the cheapest USA. Plus
no,
$37 postage.
On Amazon, they're showing $179.98. And
Amazon won't post things down here. Will. I'm very disappointed with Amazon.
They'll
post books. Yeah, they'll post books, videos. But when anything to do with like hardware, they won't post them.
Huh.
So yeah, very disappointed with Amazon. So I got to go with eBay. Hillsdale, New York seller, $191 Australian plus $37 postage to get a Combi. So that's a lot of money.
Yep. It's a bunch. But you figure the cost per gallon.
Black. And blue.
Yep. But yeah, figure the cost per gallon and
how much is your life worth?
That's right. Yeah, try using Google for your search. You might come up with some more what kind of search engine do you use down there?
Yeah, Google.
Yeah, it's popping up, $200 on campinggear.com and different places. And they're cheaper than the, if you're sedentary, you're not worried about weight. It's probably it weighs a few more ounces.
Yes, just on that point, Will. Remember grandfather's Stalking Wolf's vision and advice about the 10 years to avoid all remaining man, and how to keep and to keep moving. Most things in nature do keep moving, because if you stay in one place, you'll mess it up.
Yeah.
And if you stay in one place in the future, it may cost you your life. But if you keep moving, and not only will you not mess up the earth in that spot, but you've got a better chance of survival as well.
Mm-hmm. They're finding
I'm thinking of you might be able to stay at home for a while, but there'll become a time when you might have to start moving. And so I'm thinking of everything that you can, that's small and light,
yeah,
and you can carry. You know?
Archaeologists are finding a lot of campsites are like a million years old up on mountaintops or nearly up on mountains. And it makes sense, because in the wintertime, mountaintops are warmer, because cold air settles down in the valleys. They get more sun and a good elevation. You know, water is a problem, and it's fresh water. And that's something I was. They're discovering these in Colorado and different places. Kind of a surprise, but when you think about it, makes sense. But
I just found a combi for $171 at Lake Michigan. $171 plus $49 postage.
Off of eBay?
Off eBay, black. Looks good.
Yeah.
Definitely.
They're coming out.
You pump those. Does that top pump, does it, Will?
Yeah, it comes in a black Cordura case. And I bought about five of them. Gave some away. My son's got one, and some different people. Yeah, it's $175. Buy it now, or even less. They're a good deal, and those are new. And I've seen them for even less than that. If you just do you know how to stake out eBay? There's a way you can do searches, and when new things pop up, you'll be sent an email through eBay. I've done that for a lot of years. But yeah, it looks like right now, here's one. It looks like right now the cheapest one available is about $172 plus shipping. That's not bad. They're more than they were when I bought mine, but so is everything else. Well, folks, we've got some live listeners. You know, if you feel like you want to call in, the number is 347-996-3318. The number is right on the screen that you're listening to the interview on. Or you can Skype in. There's a little blue S right next to the telephone number, and you can Skype in and join us. Talking with Dave White down in Australia, which is probably pretty obvious to everybody up here in the States. And it's good to talk with you. And you're
good,
very informative kind of guy. You're living it. And I've been talking about it for how long?
Years, over 25 years I've been out in the bush here with solar panels. I added another one the other day. I've got a weird, wonderful collection of all different shapes and sizes of solar panels that I've collected over the years. When I had money, when I get money, I buy a solar panel. And I've got about 0.7 kilowatts, which is about 700 watts. You need about a kilowatt on a domestic house situation to supply your needs, at least a kilowatt.
Uh-huh.
And I could never afford it, you know. But I'm as close as I'm ever going to get to it, I think. I had the the power company, the council come out here over 25 years ago and told me they didn't want any more people like me, because I said, look, I don't want any power lines coming in here. I don't want to be connected to the grid. You can get free electricity from the sun. And they went, oh, we don't want any more people like you. It's like, you know, you're against progress, you know. Well, today, 2012, every bloody house that I see in the streets covered with solar panels, and the government gives you a subsidy, which I never got, to put them on, you know.
Right, yeah.
So I'm just bemused by, you know, the way things have happened. The other thing is, there doesn't seem to be any preppers down here. It's like non-existent. It's all in the United States. It's not here.
Huh. Well, they've got a new. I discovered. I've been looking at these solar kits for quite a while, and just last week there's a company called Ensupra, ENSUPRA, and these are interesting because they come with a panel and they come with an inverter. But what it does, everybody's seen these inverters that invert that you can plug your 120 AC appliances into. But these inverters, there's a wire that comes off the panels to this inverter, and then there's another cord, and you plug it into the wall. And what this does is this dumps electrical power right into your house's system, and when the solar panels are producing electricity, the guy told me, he says it's like pushing water back. He says you're using this power first and using less that's coming off the grid. And here in this area, we average a good 3 hours a day of a good sunlight, and that's going to save money. And then if the grid were to go down, of course, what you're doing is you're keeping your storage batteries topped off with just a regular battery charger. Say the grid goes down, you can use these to charge your batteries, but you'll also need to have just a regular inverter that inverts 12 volt to run whatever appliances you're running. And they come from anywhere from 50 watts to 2,000 whatever watts. And these are totally different from of a concept. They're plug and play, basically.
Yeah, they've got a same type of thing here, but the bloody power companies have jumped on the wagon and they've monopolized it all.
Yeah.
And there's no battery. So you're still paying bills to the power company, but you get a reduced, you sell electricity back to them.
Yeah.
They give you
they're not paying you for what you're buying it for. They're paying you about, let's say it's 25 cents a kilowatt hour, but they're giving you about 3 cents.
Yeah.
But still, you're using less, if it came down to it, you'd have something. If you soak $1,000 in, if you can, into a system. And right now, I'm recommending people, I know it sounds counterintuitive, but I learned years ago from Howard Ruff that, there comes a time, particularly, let's say Germany in the 30s, as money becomes worth less and less, he said that there was people that were pursuing their creditors to pay off their debts with devalued dollars, and the creditors were running from them. And so at this point, I'm saying, hey, if you can give me credit, if you can afford to make minimum payments on your credit cards, get one and max it out, and make the minimum payments, and get yourself some supplies and stuff. But see, I used to be a senior collector for Discover Card, and what they taught us was that the credit cards are unsecured debt, and they're not like your house or your car, which if you stop making the payments, they can come get them. But it's not that, and my attitude is, hey, you don't want credit anyway, and
Might as well take advantage of the situation if you can borrow some money and get some preps. I know it sounds weird, but that's what I'm recommending right now because people do need
well,
to get.
Well, they wouldn't give me a credit card, Will. They wouldn't give me one. And a little old lady in the bank said, "You should thank them. You should thank them for not giving you one because they charge like 20% interest or something ridiculous."
Yeah,
so
well,
I've never had one.
If the banks aren't going to be around in a year or two, though, think about that.
Yeah. If it can't be secured, then good for you.
Yeah. Well, and basically all they can do is ruin your credit so you can't get more credit. Anyway, I know about 5 years ago, somebody called me and I said, "Oh, we're, you know, $20,000 in debt and I can't make the payments and should I declare bankruptcy?" I said, "No, don't declare bankruptcy." I said, when I worked for Discover Card that year, Pearson Lehman and Sears, of course, you know, Discover Card was owned by Sears originally, and I said there was three organizations under the Sears and Roebuck umbrella, you know, Discover Card, Sears, and Pearson Lehman. And I said Discover Card kept the other two afloat, and they wrote off, oh, I don't know, $500 million of bad debt. But after about 5 months, you know, they write it off. And, you know, when the collectors call you, just hang up. You know, by law, they're not allowed to call back for once a week. Don't engage them. Don't talk to them. And, you know, keep your debt down below $15,000 and God be with you, you know, so. And she contacted me about
America's in trouble. America's in trouble.
Hey, you know, whatever, you know, it's not something I would have done 5 years ago, but I mean, the situation is just getting so bad and, you know, if there's no other way to get supplies and if you really know the time is short, I mean, you have to know in your heart, you know, what's going to happen, and I feel that I do, and it's a chance that I'm taking, you know, but if there's no other way, it's a way to do some things.
Well, I hope they're not listening. That's all I can say.
Well, hey, you know, we're going to make the payments, and you know, we'll make the minimum payments, whatever. You know, it's not like we're going to default on them, but you know, when the banks go away, the debt does too. Because if they don't have their computers to have their records, they're not coming after you for it.
Yeah, well, that happened in Cyclone Tracy in Darwin many years ago. Everything was wiped out. It was a natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Guy I was working with drove in a brand new car I just purchased down to Brisbane. And he went into the office in Brisbane, and they said, "We've got no record of this. It's your car, man."
Yeah?
All the records, yeah. So that's what happens in disasters. If they lose their records, then it doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't recommend you take out a second mortgage. You know, I'm just talking about credit card debt. And that's if you can handle the minimum payments for a year or two. If you feel like, you really feel like that things are going to hit the fan in the next year or two, it's something to think about.
I just float, for, you know, I just keep 3 cents in the bank so they don't close my bank account.
But
about the Bible, man, that's a miracle I'm still here. I'm very grateful to still be here. And there was a beautiful saying. It said, "If you can't do anything to help anyone, then at least don't hurt anyone."
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you do that, you've achieved something.
Well, no. I saw a picture. Is Kimmy your friend?
Yeah, that's my other name. That's my other Christian name.
Oh, okay. I couldn't figure out. There was a picture of a guy. You know, a bald fellow, and I couldn't figure out if that was you, or and there was a picture of a man standing next to a motorcycle.
Are they both? Best motorcycle ever made on the planet. DC-110. Custom made by Honda Japan for Oz Post.
Are they both pictures of you?
0.1 litre motor.
Oh, yeah.
Still on 45 miles an hour all day, every day, and $5 to fill the tank.
Now, the picture of the fellow standing next to the motorcycle with the dingo.
That's me. That's me.
You?
They're all me.
Okay.
Yeah, I just let my hair grow back. That's all.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it's warmer in winter, you know? So,
gotcha. I'll put that picture up too.
Starting to get that sort of hermit look going now.
I'll put that picture up, too. And, you know what? I have gone and lost that. Hey, Mark, would you send me the link to this recording artist?
To what?
Would you send me that link to that recording artist that we, the Aboriginal recording artist that, that Dave played earlier so I can splice that into the show?
I don't think you sent it to me.
No. Well, Dave, what was that guy's name? I lost the browser page, the recording artist.
Hang on. I'll just send you the link again. Okay?
Oh, that's okay. I'll get it and slice that into the show. We got about 10 minutes left, so I wanted to. I closed that browser and lost his name. But
it's coming through now. Coming through now.
Okay, sounds good. But
I'm coming cool, but I'm just ignoring it at the moment.
So you live out there alone, or you got any company?
I've got three Shetland ponies about to be four. They're doing a great job. I don't have to cut any grass anymore. It's wonderful. They get in under the bushes. They're only little animals. They get in under the bushes, and they do a fantastic job, better than any mower could do. I've got about 12 chickens, which we call Chook. I've got two dogs left, and I'm friends with all the bird. I feed half the wild bird life here. They all share the Chook food, wild bird seed. I give them, cost a fortune, but they're good friends. And, yeah, it's just me and the animals, you know, really. And, you know, they're great role models, you know. Unlike humans, they seem to have so many problems. You know, the dog will love you to death forever. But humans are just, they're a bit of a concern to me at the moment, honestly.
Yeah. Saw that picture of Miss Tippy when she was little. And she's bigger now, but Jack Russell's. I don't want to tell you. There's a really good book out by a fellow by the name. He's an Argentine guy, and his name is Ferfal, F-E-R-F-A-L, and he's got a website. Let's see, it's called Ferfal's Modern Survival. This guy lived through the financial collapse in Argentina 11 years ago. And I bought his book, and I'll tell you what, it's a fantastic book. We're talking about getting him on the show, but he's on Facebook. His name is F-E-R-F-A-L, Ferfal's Modern Survival Manual. And his website is on Blogspot, but this book it's self-published. It's about $25, but I'll tell you, it's a fantastic book. This guy's in his 30s, and he lived through stuff down there that we'll probably be going through here pretty shortly. And I highly recommend this guy's book. Yeah, he's at ferfal.blogspot.com, or, it's it's also known, yeah, themodernsurvivalist.com is his website, and he's got a radio show, and just check out his blog talk or his Facebook page, and go to his about and his contact info, themodernsurvivalist.com, furfowl.blogspot.com, and grabtheapple.com. I highly recommend his book.
Carrying gear and small children. That Friday the 27th, 2012. He's up to date.
Yep, I think I'm gonna get him on. I'm talking about getting him on a show with Tom Chittum, who wrote the book Civil War II. Very well known guy. He's he lived through the Balkans conflicts, and it's got some really neat perspectives on stuff that happens when society breaks down. It's nice to have guys around that actually lived through this, and Furfowl lived through this, and he's got some excellent information. Got three good websites. Highly recommend. But yeah, his book is called, let me get it up here, it's called Surviving Economic Collapse, The Modern Survival Manual. It's available on Amazon. Yeah, I sprung for $25, but well worth it. It's about 600-700 pages, and 4.5 stars for 112 customer reviews, and based on firsthand experience in the 2001 economic collapse in Argentina. Covers a lot of stuff, and also gives good advice on stuff you ought to get. You know, what kind of machete and what kind of lights, and you know how many batteries you ought to have, and all kinds of good, excellent advice. Well, we're winding down here. Got about 4 more minutes before they're going to cut us off.
Oh, I wanted to ask Mike, is it, where he was?
I'm in Denver, Colorado area.
Okay. Wow. We're all out in the place.
And if you're listening in...
You didn't have a surprise there, I know that.
Well, you're doing...
How did you go with the fire, Mike?
Yeah. Yeah, we they're all out now, but there were quite a few fires. They were all around us, north, south, and west of us.
Because you do quite a bit of gardening, don't you, Mark?
Yeah. Yeah, we had one day there when the fire from the north, the one up north in Long Mountain, up in that area somewhere, it was drifting down. We were all walking, and there was smoke drifting by.
Mm-hmm.
That was about, that was about 40, 50 miles away.
Wow.
Yeah, it travels long distances.
Yeah.
It's
one other thing, though, is a good idea for people on prep stuff, and this is one of the things one of the Hopi elders said, and he said, when I talked to him, he said, save your seeds.
Mm-hmm.
You want seeds.
Yeah.
You can use them. You can buy stuff with them. You can barter with them. You can trade with them. You can grow stuff with them. But you can also, if you get in a situation where you can't even grow, you can just throw those seeds in some water and just sprout them.
That's right.
You can survive, and the sprouts are actually very nutritional, and they don't even need sunlight. So they grow in the dark. You could even grow them underground or in a cellar or a cave or whatever. You could just have enough, a little bit of water and those seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And you could sprout them, and you could live off that for a while.
That's right. Just need a mason jar with some mason jar. Just take the lid off and just use the ring. There's a lot of fancy things you can get. But just use some screen. Just take some window screen and slam it over the lid and just force the ring on, and and every couple of days, you know, just rinse them off and just shake all the water out of them and put them in the sun, and they'll produce all the vitamins and minerals. You can live off of them.
Yeah.
When we were kids, we used to grow wheat on cotton wool. You ever do that?
Yeah? You're talking about growing cannabis?
No, wheat.
Oh, wheat?
I lived in a wheat farming area, and we used to grow wheat on cotton wool, you know?
Yeah, and you want the hard red winter wheat, and that's good stuff. And alfalfa, though, is probably better. They call that the king of herbs. And
yeah.
Absolutely. Everybody ought to know about
lentils and mung beans. They sprout really good too.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have to do another show just on, it's something we can think about, Marcus, just to, you know, pick a subject, you know, once a week or a few subjects, and we'll talk about them. But anyway, we need to go, guys.
Okay, thank you very much, Will. Mike, thank you.
All right, take care.
All the best in North America.
You bet. Best you down there.
God bless.
All right. Okay. Have a good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powers. I like Gas Mojo. They're very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby. Yeah!
What a gas, baby, yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Let the truth